Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Brendan? Brendan? His Aunt Jane called up the stairs. We're having supper and we'd like you to join us. It's okay, Brendan's 10-year-old brother George responded, showing up at his aunt's side. He stays in his room a lot, but it's okay. Well, it's not okay to miss meals, Aunt Jane replied. Your folks wouldn't be pleased to hear he didn't eat while they were away. It's cool, George advised. Teenagers are like that, you know. I'm not so sure it's cool, Aunt Jane sighed. I've hardly seen your brother all week. I just hope he's okay. From a parent's perspective, how can we tell what's normal teen behavior and what's not? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with teens and these kinds of issues all the time. Dr. Bruce S. Pomerantz is a licensed psychologist operating a private clinical practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. He specializes in treating problems of adolescents, children, and adults, including depression, anxiety, oppositional behavior, academic performance, achievement, and identity. He works to teach parents to foster independence and increased responsibility in their children, as well as how to discipline them more effectively. He's the father of two very young children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Pomerantz.
Thank you for having me.
What would you say is the biggest myth about adolescence?
There are many myths, but probably among the most prominent is the one where parents believe that they simply cannot have a satisfying relationship with their teen. I think the myth is based on parents simply not knowing enough about their teens and feeling like they're not reachable. And part of what I teach parents to do is to communicate generally and more effectively with their teens because they are reachable.
That's encouraging.
Yes.
Do you do it by asking them to remember how it was, or is that something that we can't go back and remember?
They tend to remember for themselves that their teenage years were not very pleasant. So actually what I tell them is to remember that their teens are actually human beings who have needs, and that even though they're not their cuddly children as they once were, they still are looking to parents for guidance and structure, and they really need them to help them with various developmental tasks.
Even though a teenager can say, I don't want you anywhere near me, don't talk to me, don't tell me this, very negative behavior.
That's exactly right. In fact, part of normal behavior among adolescents is to withdraw from family and to reject the parents in many respects. Their task, of course, is to become separate from their parents and to become individuals. And in so doing, they can come across as disrespectful and sometimes even insolent. What's important for parents, however, to know is that they're not trying necessarily to be disrespectful and insolent. They're just trying to become their own person.
Okay. What is a teenager's biggest challenge? We heard about what the parent's biggest challenge is. What's the teen's biggest challenge?
For the teen, it's probably trying to become separate from their parents and feel confident about it, coupled with fitting in socially, especially with peers and within the family as it evolves over time.
You hear that the social pressure and the social adjustments are so overpowering for young people.
They really are. There are a tremendous number of pressures on adolescents. There's pressure to perform. There's pressure to be popular. There's pressure to be well-liked. And this results in a lot of upset at times, and it's important for parents to be available minimally as listeners, not necessarily to solve these issues, but to listen
to
these problems.
That must be very hard, because we're used to, when kids are little, helping them solve the problems.
That's exactly right. In fact, one of the things I have to talk with parents about often is, don't rush in to take care of this child in terms of solving. And I say child in a very endearing sense. Teens need to understand how to solve problems for themselves, but they still look to both parents to determine how to approach a problem, to maybe gain a different perspective, to figure out resources. So as I said before, parents remain prominent in the lives of teens, even if at times parents don't get that impression.
And that's a difficult thing, I would think, because if, you know, my mother used to say, little children, little problems, big children, big problems. So if a teen is supposed to learn how to solve things on his own and blah, blah, and yet sometimes the problems are a big deal and there's a big consequence for doing something wrong.
That's correct. One must remember as a parent that one is a role model. And so generally, one has to have one's act together, generally speaking. So it's important to come across as confident, but knowing when to ask for help, tending not to react excessively to difficult situations, but to try to approach it from as calm a perspective as possible. Don't act like you know everything, and come across as being able and willing to learn. That in and of itself, I think, is paramount in a life of a teen, to see that in a model.
I think it was Mark Twain who said, you know, when he was in his teens, his father didn't know anything, and he was just amazed at how much his father had learned by the time he was in his 20s.
That's right. That is a nice comment on one of the hallmark signs of the teenager, and that is they tend to think that their intelligence and that of their peers skyrockets vis-a-vis that of their parents. And they perceive their parents' intelligence, of course, as simply plummeting. And as they get older, perhaps they go away to college or go away to work, go into the military, what have you, and come back, they start to see their parents from a different perspective and can actually convey respect much more openly.
I think the going away to college is also a big key. It happened in my house. I have three sons. Mm. Every one of them came home either at Thanksgiving or the first winter vacation with the comments that dealt with how appreciative they were of the home in which they had grown up, which was just shocking to us because, of course, during high school, that wasn't how they felt.
Right. The communication patterns are so different. So it's nice to hold out hope and be patient, wait for your teen to become older. And pretty typically he or she comes back to express some words of appreciation. That's what I found, at least.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teens, what's normal and what's not.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Bruce Pomerantz about what's normal and what isn't with raising teenagers.
Dr. Pomerantz, are there certain developmental tasks of adolescents?
There are a couple of really large ones, actually. One is the transition to independence, wherein the person tries, as I said before, to become more separate from parents and yet still dealing with some issues of dependency. And then there's the issue of identity. There's the time when teenagers have abstract thinking. It's called formal thinking, formal operational thinking. And they're able to really deal with big questions such as who they are, what is important to them, how will their lives have meaning, what do they believe in. And so they have to take a lot of different experiences and information that they glean during their teenage years and start to figure out who they're going to become. That, of course, can be very unsettling because sometimes there are pressures to become or to follow in certain paths. And in other times, there is no apparent guidance. So I believe those are the two largest
issues. Stuff doesn't happen in a year or two or three. This could be multiple years.
This could take many, many years, could take more than a decade. In fact, I actually believe that all of us have a changing identity over time. And even full-fledged adults, if you will, continue to change their identities as a function of their experience.
What is a parent's greatest challenge with an adolescent?
The parent's greatest challenge has to do with communication. Most of the parents that I work with simply do not know how to relate. They have expectations that are not realistic, and they take too personally some of the typical signs of adolescence, which is speaking less, withdrawing, and sometimes acting disrespectfully. And so I talk with parents about how to really stop and take time out to talk with their teens, talk just to talk, not necessarily to teach, not necessarily to correct, but just to model talking. I encourage parents to disclose of themselves. Teens don't like to hear others talking very much, and once they hear a parent talk at least a little bit about him or herself, they start to open up a bit. And once that happens, it's important for parents not to ask too many questions. Too many questions seems to promote a sort of clamming effect wherein the teenager stops talking. Lectures, pretty typically, are not good. As a parent, I think it's important in the communicative area to focus on what's positive. Don't focus on critical remarks. Try to be positive. Try to maintain a positive emotional climate at home and work with your partner or spouse, if you have one, toward that end. When a teen approaches you, it's important, really, to stop what you're doing if you can. Obviously, if you're driving a car, you're not necessarily going to pull over, but you might consider lowering the radio volume if you have it on and really trying to listen. If you're at a table, for example, and you're reading the newspaper, put it down, make some eye contact with your son or daughter, and let that person know that you're there. You don't want to rush to judge. You just want to hear what they have to say and maybe reflect to them what they've said. It's important when you hear them talk not to try to come up with some kind of an argument or some kind of a way to correct them, but just to hear what they have to say and let them know you're listening. Some people think that that's a little inane, but actually, that's worth its weight in platinum, if you can do that.
I think having an opportunity to listen is worth its weight in platinum, because so often you can listen, 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 and you're just hearing silence.
That's true. What you can do is take advantage of certain opportunities. For example, when transporting your son or daughter in a car, it's a great time. You have a captive audience. It's a great time to make some chit-chat. Even the chit-chat is okay. Invite the teen to do activities with you, something that you can share. Take him out for a bite to eat, go to a movie, take a walk. Show interest in their hobbies or interests. Visit them in their room. Greet them when you come home. Express interest in their music. Try to understand it. You don't have to understand it, but as long as you show interest, they're going to feel very comfortable with you. If they're interested in computer games and the like, show some interest in that. Be optimistic. Be positive.
What are some red flags that we should watch for in a teenager's behavior?
Well, there are generally three clusters of warning flags, and some of them overlap with each other. There is school, for example, wherein there's problems with attendance. Teens who are chronically tardy or who skip classes or who don't show up at all. There's excessive demands on teachers' time, difficulty with attention or concentration, precipitous drops in grades, inconsistent work patterns, which in and of itself could be an indication of drug and or alcohol use. Then there are interpersonal problems, rejection of peers, being overly angry toward peers, tending to overreact to criticism by peers. And the biggest dimension probably is the personal dimension. The hallmark one is the sign of depression. In addition to depressed mood, there's loss of energy, fatigue. Sometimes there's talk of suicide. There can be excessive crying, excessive talk of worthlessness, loss of pleasure in most activities, a drop in attention to personal grooming, especially in teens who really focus a lot on that. And that actually tends to be another hallmark sign of the teenage years, focusing on one's appearance. There can be some really unusual behaviors, such as violent outbursts, physical violence, such as hitting a wall or hitting a piece of equipment. And that can happen, of course, more than once to be considered abnormal. Unusual statements or references to what one would think of as weird, like interest in UFOs, concern that somebody is spying on them, and that could be indicative of a delusional process, that is, thoughts and beliefs that have no basis in reality. And then finally, an important symptom is a fascination with guns or other weapons, especially in homes where there are no such items. That is, in homes where, for example, the parents may have guns because they hunt recreationally. So there are a number of warning signs. That was not an exhaustive list, and one particular sign was not necessarily one more important than the other. But what it means is you have to know your teen and be involved in his or her life.
What kinds of situations should parents regard as sort of slippery slopes for trouble, things that happen before these red flags come up?
I think when your teen refuses to disclose where she might be going with other peers, does not want to conform to a curfew, is not going to tell you who they're going to spend time with, something is probably up and merits further investigation. I think if you find evidence of alcohol use or substance use, maybe some beer cans under the bed or some drug paraphernalia, be surprised. Some parents don't want to deal with it and pretend they don't see it, but I think as soon as you see it, you have to bring it to this teen's attention that you are aware of it and address it. And also, I believe the teen spending too much time with one particular teen, a peer, like a girlfriend or a boyfriend, as the case may be, probably at the expense of interacting with other peers and family. Those are just some examples.
How can you tell whether that's normal infatuation with the opposite sex?
Well, of course, teens become normally infatuated, but they shouldn't want to spend almost all their waking hours with that other person, like I said, at the expense of being with other peers. Boys, for example, should be very much interested in spending time also with boys. There's a bonding experience. There's some learning from them in terms of how to be a male, in terms of how to problem solve. So they should have interest in girls, for example, but not want to focus solely on girls. It could be indicative of they're just being uncomfortable dealing with boys.
And vice versa, right?
Oh, of course. Goes both ways.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teens, what's normal and what's not.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Bruce Pomerantz about what's normal and what's not when raising teenagers.
What about the whole business of peers and peer group? That's really the elephant in the room, I think, with adolescents. And parents, I think, feel very helpless to deal with that. You know, they see peers that they think, they don't look so good. What do you do?
That's true. Well, I think it's important for parents to know the peers with whom their son or daughter spends time. You can ask a lot of questions, get to know who they are, where they come from. You can't order your son or daughter not to spend time to someone. I think that simply makes you look weak because there's just no way to enforce that. You can talk about their friends. I wouldn't criticize them necessarily because I think that is likely to lead to your son or daughter spending more time with that particular individual. You are a general source of influence as a parent. The values that you have generally are picked up upon by your son or daughter, and they're not necessarily going to throw them away. Now, they might want to make you angry. They might want to respond to what they perceive as an excessive effort on your part to control them. So they might intentionally want to spend time with kids who don't come across as, quote, decent, unquote, or seem to dress a little unusually or talk a little bit unusually. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. When in doubt, get some more information.
How do you do that?
Well, for example, you could tell your son to invite some of his friends over and, you know, buy a pizza and let's get to know them. Now, the son may say, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, obviously, then you do not force, but you keep handing out the invitation.
There are some houses where the perfectly normal, lovely, cooperative teenager does not want to invite friends over because at other people's houses they can get away with beer or wine, and they can't in your house.
That's exactly right, which is related to another important subject, and that is when your teen is going out or spending time in other people's homes. I think it's important for the parent to know the other parents and to find out if there's going to be some adult supervision. Of course, the teen will probably scream bloody murder or the equivalent, but that's okay. You know, most teens talk about not liking the structure, at least to their parents, but when I talk to them in a session, they actually feel a sense of relief. It lets them know that their parents care, and it helps them set some limits and boundaries.
The problem that I certainly found when my kids were adolescents was you could talk to the other parents and they would say, yes, yes, we're going to be there. And you can't make them sign a pledge that they're going to march through the rooms in question. And they could be there, and their idea of being there might be staying in their bedroom with the door closed, and there's nothing we can do.
You're absolutely correct. You have to use your best judgment, and of course, life involves taking certain calculated risks. If you let your teen go to a certain home and you find out afterward that there was alcohol use and there was some kind of trouble, you can investigate. You can tell your teen you're not allowed to go there anymore. And deal with the ramifications. I think that's part of a parent's task.
We found out years later that at one of the homes that one of my sons was going to socially, the mother was a single parent, and when the kids came there, they were all driving at that point. She had a bowl. They all had to put their car keys into the bowl, which she then took into her bedroom, where she disappeared. And the kids had pool parties and every other kind of imaginable party. What she did was she made them sleep over at her house because she had the keys. Mm-hmm. But she was not out there supervising at the swimming pool where we know there must have been alcohol.
Right.
Or why would she have taken away the keys? It was a little scary, but of course we didn't know that. We knew the mother was home. We knew the family. And so we were sort of shocked to find this out years later after they had outgrown that stage.
It's impossible to know everything, and we can't be perfect. We do the best we can, and we try to accept ourselves in all our efforts.
What about driving? Linda brought up the kids were old enough to drive. Is there anything that parents need to know? One of the issues with driving is you say, well, we don't want you to go to that place again, and the child is driving, or the child has friends who are driving, and they're going to go out, and oh, they'll probably make a stop there on their way, cruising around from thing to thing.
Even the issue of when they begin to drive. I know in some homes, they're not allowed to drive till they're 18,
yes.
Regardless of the law.
Right.
And in some homes, it's the minute you're old enough to get a learner's permit, off you go to get it.
That's right. Well, in this society, there are certain age limits and requirements for eligibility to gain a driver's license. I tend to think you can use that to help the teen become more independent over time. And I believe that if a teen is of age and works toward learning how to drive under supervision, that it's important to allow that teen to get the permit and license. Of course, the teen has to satisfy the parent in terms of driving skills. You also have to look at the relationship from a broader perspective. You want to be able to trust your teen, and so you're looking at multiple interactions over various situations, and so you don't focus only on the driving aspect. You focus on how responsible is my son in terms of doing schoolwork? Does my daughter come home when she's supposed to come home, when I tell her to come home? Do they help around the house at all? Do they seem to use common sense? Are they impulsive or not? I think the only time I recommend that parents not allow their teens to drive is if there exists an alcohol or substance problem that is not being addressed willfully by the teen, him or herself, then I think it's just totally unsafe. But otherwise, it makes sense, from my perspective, to help the teen become more independent and to teach them how to drive over time.
Now, if you could address all parents and give them some advice about the teenage years, what would you say?
For the teenage years, it's important to communicate. It's important to establish an emotional connection. It's important to be a role model. Spend time with your teen. Mm. Don't just throw money at them trying to make problems go away.
It doesn't work, right?
It doesn't work. It really doesn't work. And oftentimes, even though teens might like the money, they're disappointed and they feel rejected. And they may not tell the parent that, but they'll tell someone like me or a teacher, someone else like that.
It's interesting that so they're disappointed when there are not guidelines, the security of rules.
Sure, because they understand that parents are basically teachers, even though they have problems with some aspects of the parenting effort. They still value that. It's just like teens, for example, who come across as not caring at all about school. In the 18 years of my practice, I still haven't met one who hasn't told me, you know, I really would like to get A's. They all say that. They all say, I really care for my parent. I wish that they could spend more time with me or help me out with such and such a problem.
Well, it's unfortunate that we have to curtail our time, but what resources for further information would you want to leave with the parents who are listening?
Well, there are many good books out there, but among the three that I probably like the most are Keys to Parenting Your Teenager by Don Fontenelle. Dr. Lawrence Kuttner has a book called Making Sense of Your Teenager. And then Dr. Sylvia Rim has a book entitled Dr. Sylvia Rim's Smart Parenting. And that book actually covers parenting children as well as teens. And these are just general good resources about how to deal with most common problems and how to communicate and discipline your children and teenagers.
Well, we are very grateful to have you, Dr. Bruce Pomerantz, to share this time and help us know what's normal and what's not. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 327 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Evelyn Sachs Trust. Our sound engineer is Colin Fotia. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.